You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
I can assure you I mean you no harm.
Who are you?
Who? Who is but the form following the function of what, and what I am is a man in a mask.
Well, I can see that.
Of course you can. I'm not questioning your powers of observation. I'm merely remarking upon the paradox of asking a masked man who he is.
Oh.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Masked man's got
a mask. Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 115, although my show notes say 114 for the 15th of January, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I'm joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, man. I've managed to get caffeine between the two shows. Something cold and caffeinated.
Well,
so
we can't have hot and caffeinated today. Now, just for those, somebody in our chat room just before we started the show said, well, you guys should really quit complaining about the heat because it's 30 degrees and 64% humidity where I am. I'm not sure where you are, but that sounds very hot. Let's specify. Yeah. It's really humid here in Sydney today, but it's not actually the outside temperature we're talking about. It's studio temperature.
It's because we have to lock off the entire room to get
That's right. Sound. We close up all the windows, and we've got the computers running, and it's humid, and it's hot, and it gets airless. And so when we complain about heat, we're actually complaining about in-studio heat. Okay, this is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com, and we're back for another week.
Yeah.
This week, we are going to be reviewing Tony Scott's latest effort, Unstoppable, which we will come back a little bit later
effort.
On.
Effort. That's an interesting choice of word. We'll come back to that.
I was trying to figure out the best way to word that. Effort just seemed to come up. We also take a look at a little bit of film news in our entertainment buzz section. And of course, we deliver another list of five. This week, we are going to do... Actually, my notes are all over the place. It actually says listener requested. This is not the listener requested list. This is our list of five, which is in... tone with Unstoppable. I thought we would do a list of five movies on my show notes. I've written five movies on movie vehicles. That now that would be a list. Five movies on moving vehicles is our list of five. Boy, we are a mess today. All right. But first, as we did last week, we thought it was such a fun section to do. We thought we'd do it every week, which of course is what have we been watching this week, Josh? What are we doing?
Oh, that was directed at me?
Yeah absolutely.
Oh, okay. I finished watching Luther.
I don't think there's anybody else in the studio.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure if it was a question or you were
No, what have we been watching? What have you been watching this week?
Well, look, I have finished Luther, the series. And
this is season one, right?
There's only one season.
Okay.
It was six episodes long. I've never seen a show come apart so quickly in the last 5 minutes. I would like to say a personal thing to the makers of the show and go, shame on you, you sequel-plugging little bastards. Okay?
Oh dear.
You had the ability to perfectly end a six-episode series, and instead you went for a shameless, like, next-showing plug, and I just condemn you to that. That's, like, the lowest form of TV hell is when you do that.
Oh, dearie, dearie, dearie.
It's like, no, I was so on board the entire thing. I was willing to call it one of the greatest seasons I've seen in a long time. It just takes you on a beautiful ride through human... just through human anguish, like the stuff this guy has to deal with. Don't misunderstand me. I will rewatch the series. Like, it will happen. It's just that good. Like, it's a great character, and it's all about the characters. Mm. And, like, I mean, what this guy deals with on a daily basis and then his own life on top of that is just...
Yeah, I have to see this series.
Really,
I've heard some good stuff about it, and you've said some good stuff about it, so...
Yeah, and, so that came apart. So I've been a little bit disappointed in that, so I have continued my walk through films... that I've recently we got an Apple TV at Christmas, and
this is the new little hockey puck one.
Yep, the little black one. And look, I mean, I'm not a huge supporter. We mainly got it because we thought it was a good Christmas present for the two of us to kind of go halves in and kind of have in the house.
And about two of you, sorry, just for those who don't know, Josh is flatmates with Shane, who used to be on our Tech Actually show.
So. Anyway, and it will become a lot more useful when we move soon. Don't panic anyone. It's still going to be around this area. But when we move, it will be in the lounge and all the computers will be in another room. So it will become very useful. Mm-hmm. But we have a rule, which is that we only buy films that are junky and that you will eventually rewatch. Like things like 90s thrillers like Kiss the Girls and Demolition Man. So we did Demolition Man or Three Quarters
of
it.
Now I would ask you, is it the English version?
No, it's the good one.
It's the Taco Bell version.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, excellent.
Nothing's changed. It was a perfectly good version. So that was cool. It was good to watch that. I rewatched Jaws 2 recently, which, unlike you, I actually consider the better Jaws film.
Oh, sacrilege.
No, I'm sorry, dude.
Jaws
1 is a mess. It was it's a good film, but it had troubles the entire way through it. 2 just feels like the more fulfilled.
Jaws 1, superior in every way. Sorry, man. Gotta debate that. We're gonna have a debate on this at some stage.
Yeah.
Because Jaws 1 is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, well,
and here is a film with superlative performances from every member of the cast. Just all round better thriller and better made. Roy's brilliant.
Roy's brilliant, but he has this thing where he doesn't seem to be able to yell. His lip seems to catch when he goes to yell. Have you ever noticed this?
No.
Watch Jaws 2 and watch the end when he's holding the thing. He can't quite
Oh, Rashida, you're talking about. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's just funny. I just noticed that for the first time when I was watching the film.
Smile, like, you son of a... I love Jaws. I got to say, I love Jaws. Jaws 2, I actually think is okay. I quite like Jaws 2. I think it's actually still a decent film. It's a decent sequel, but I don't think it doesn't even compare. That's absolutely true. It's once again, film is a completely subjective thing.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I love about film is the fact that one man's poison is another man's pleasure. Yeah. So, what else? So you watched Jaws 2,
yeah.
Luther. What else you got?
I've started a bunch of new shows. I'm revisiting Misfits and I'm hoping to get that. My New Year's resolution is to finish everything.
By the way, for anybody in Australia, Misfits is now on DVD, season 1.
Oh, really?
I saw it in JB the other day. There you go.
So Misfits is a series I'm revisiting, but to be honest, there's been a lot of setup over the last week, just reconnecting all of the DLC plugs and ports and rearranging my room.
Yeah.
And also, I am moving soon, so I have been house hunting all week.
I'm actually thinking, I got down to the last episode of season 1. I still haven't watched the last episode of season 1, but I've actually now left it for many weeks, and I'm thinking I might just start the series again. I might reboot, go from episode 1.
Some series you have to do that with.
Well, especially with that, because it actually is a continuous story that kind of runs through the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I think I may have to actually run through it all. And now, just a little piece of trivia.
Yeah.
Josh, what we were talking about with Demolition Man, for those who don't know, the original cinema release we got in Australia of Demolition Man, this is the Sylvester Stallone science fiction film, was the original American print and the original version. The version that came out on video and DVD in this country is actually the British print of it. And because they don't have the restaurant Taco Bell in England, they actually digitally manipulated the film and turned all the references to Taco Bell to Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
And they overdubbed the film so that whenever they made reference to Taco Bell, they made reference to Pizza Hut. So on DVD, that's the version you get. But what you're saying is on the iTunes store, they've got the original version, which is the better. It doesn't look quite so fake.
That may have changed now because we actually have Taco Bell in this country. So they may have actually jumped up and down about
now. But they're not grabbing new prints. They're still using the old prints. So anyway, so just a little piece of trivia. If you ever see the film, it's originally supposed to be Taco Bell, the restaurant, and it's they've changed it to Pizza Hut and a lot of prints. So depending on which print you get, that's the only change, though. So it's not like it's cut or anything. It's the only change. Okay, so what have I been doing? All right. I didn't actually go into this last week because it was still kind of gestating as an idea, but I'll mention it now. It's not fully up yet, but Delta Knight in the chat room says, that's just wrong about the changing of Taco Bell to Pizza. I agree. Josh and I both feel the same way, I believe, which is that you watch enough films with a critical eye.
Yeah.
And you start to become a little bit dispassionate about film. And we are both very passionate about film.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to re-spark that passion in film and not just look at everything as a critical eye, but to look at stuff just for the sheer joy of looking at it and watching stuff that you would, even stuff that we've reviewed and said it was crap, re-watching it again now and just saying, just wash over me and just tell me a story and see what happens. Anyway, this started kind of the week between Christmas and New Year's when I was watching a lot of Blu-rays in one go because I was sick, as I said before. And then when the New Year's Day started, I was watching a lot of movies. And I thought, you know what? I should start recording every movie I've watched this year, just to have an idea of how many films I actually watch in a year. But what was actually happening was I was noticing that I had actually started to watch one to two films every single day.
You want to add to the list. That's what I've noticed, because I'm doing the same thing myself.
And so I thought, well, do you know what? Hell with this. I'm actually going to make a game out of this, make it an adventure, as I call it. And so I've now set myself some ground rules, and I am actually now obligated to watch at least one film a day. More is better.
But, like, surely there are exceptions. Some days you won't be able to.
Nope, one film a day. Gotta be one film a day.
It'll happen, dude. There'll be a day.
Maybe. But so far, it is now the 15th, and I have my list in front of me. Now, the reason why I say I was going to announce this is because I've actually set up a blog just for this. Mm-hmm. Now, people are going to say, why don't you just put it on Geek Actually? Because I don't want to just flood Geek Actually with a lot of nonsense. Mm-hmm. If I end up writing something substantial about a film, I will actually link it into Geek Actually, definitely. Mm-hmm. But what I'm doing now is I've created a Tumblr account. So it's actually at davidmcveigh.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm. And you can go and have a look at my adventure. At the moment, there's only three entries. I'm actually back entering all the stuff from the past, and then it'll be kept on a daily basis once I've got it all up to date. And basically, this is my little adventure, and I'm keeping track of every film I'm seeing this year, and so far I have seen one, if not two, films on every single day this year. So we'll just do this week, because we're talking about what we've seen this week. So this week I've seen so far, I watched The Prestige again, which I enjoyed thoroughly. I watched A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers, and what I've actually seemed to have inadvertently happened is I've started a mini festival of Kevin Smith / Coen Brothers films. I'm kind of alternating between these two groups, these two people, these two sets of filmmakers. And so I've seen this week Serious Man, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Jersey Girl, Intolerable Cruelty, Unstoppable at the Cinema, and Clerks on Blu-ray. Now, there's more. I can't remember where this week started. I think we started on the 8th this week, so Burn After Reading, Big Lebowski, you know, so I've got a lot of films here. And the rules that I've laid down for myself are minimum one film a day, can be seen at home or at the cinema, doesn't matter, and it has to be a feature-length film, though.
Right.
So television shows don't count. So in between all of this, mind you, I'm also catching up with Battlestar again. My son has decided he wants to see the new Battlestar series, so we've rewatched it from the first season. We're actually just about to finish season three, so we've been powering through Battlestar as well during all of this. But I got to tell you, I'm enjoying watching films thoroughly. I get to a certain point in the evening, it's like we've watched some Battlestar, we've done this, and it's like, okay, movie time. On goes a disc, you know? It's like, that's just the way it is. I have to watch a movie. And I'm watching these movies just purely for the sheer pleasure of watching films. So I've got to tell you, just as an example, the first film I watched this year, January 1st, was Swamp Thing.
Oh, dude.
Which was a nasty B-grade film. But you know what? One of the rules I kind of set down, it's not in writing, but one of the rules I set down in my mind is I have to find at least one positive thing to say about every film. Because there's got to be something positive in every film, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, for all of its faults, Swamp Thing is just B-grade nonsense.
Oh, I don't think you could consider it anything else.
And it actually gets worse as the film goes on. It's like they had no money. They had great aspirations for making a DC comic book and then had no money to actually make this thing work.
Yeah.
I will give the film one thing, and the American viewers didn't actually get this. They got only a little bit of side because it was cut down. But Australia and the European versions actually have a wonderful topless scene by Adrian Barbeau, which comes out of nowhere and has served no purpose in the film whatsoever. But, you know, there's your positive for Swamp Thing. But, of course, because we're watching films for pure pleasure, literally 2 days after watching Swamp Thing, I also watched Return of Swamp Thing. which, speaking of nasty, if you want to get really nasty, Return of Swamp Thing.
I think that redefines the concept of video nasty, that film.
Return of Swamp
Thing. That was just, wow.
I got to tell you, though, it's funny, because even my son started watching Return of Swamp Thing going, why? What? I don't understand. It was very funny to watch. So anyway, so there you go. That's my little experiment. So if you want to follow along, it will be feeding over to Twitter. Once again, you can follow me on Twitter as well. Now, the other thing we did viewing-wise, we haven't actually viewed them yet, of course, but the other thing we have done viewing-wise is Josh and I went to a movie sale this morning.
Oh, yes.
There is a Blockbuster down the road from us, and if anybody lives in the Randwick area...
too late.
Well, it goes until tomorrow, so it's 2 days worth, but I'm sure the good stuff... They were packed this morning.
Yeah.
But they are selling... They're liquidating the entire store.
Yeah.
And their prices range from $5, but it is negotiable.
Yeah.
For the weekly films, and then up to, I think, $15 for Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And 20 for the box sets of TV shows. So if you do want to pop down and have a look, it's a 20 Belmore Road in Randwick. And as I say, by the time the audio listeners hear this, it's pretty much over. But for those who are watching live, if you want to pop down there. We've got some good deals, though. What did you pick up?
You go first.
All right, I'll go first. All right. I got my bag of films here, so let's have a look. I picked up a bunch of stuff.
We just figured we'd share with you guys.
Infernal Affairs 1 and 2.
Awesome.
Those who don't know Infernal Affairs, the film The Departed, the Scorsese film, is a remake of Infernal Affairs.
Yeah.
And in many ways, Infernal Affairs is actually a better film. Yeah. In many ways, Scorsese's is a better film. So it's really interesting looking at both of them to see where they went right and wrong with those. Now, in continuing with the journey through what I'm referring to as my year with the movies, I've got Coen Brothers' The Man Who Wasn't There, which is a really odd little film. So
odd.
We'll have a look at that. Odd is a good word. The Hudsucker Proxy, another Coen Brothers film. Actually getting rarer and rarer to find that one. So I'm glad I picked that one up. And, of course, The Lady Killers, which is not one of their finest films, but still part of the canon, so we've got to have a look at it. And we also picked up some other things. Brick, we've reviewed on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And Brick,
fantastic film.
Awesome film. Picked up a copy of that really cheap. These are all from their weekly catalog. Dr. Strangelove, fantastic stuff. And before you guys think they were one of only all of these, so you're not going to pick up any of these.
Dave, you have to give that its total title.
Sorry, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Thank you.
Stanley Kubrick's masterpiece of black comedy. The Reader, the Kate Winslet film. We've actually reviewed that on this show as well, which I actually quite enjoyed. Cocoon, one of Ron Howard's finest films. I really liked Cocoon. Three more, guys. We're still going. So these are all things I'll be watching over. Let's see. How many films? 11 films. So over the next 11 days.
Yeah.
Sunshine, which is a film that I have not seen. Mm-hmm. Danny Boyle film. And it's funny because it gets such mixed things. People love it or they don't really like it that much. And I thought about buying it. And I finally said to Josh, I said, is it worth it?
It's a beautiful film and it's definitely worth the money.
And I said, is it worth a couple of bucks? And he goes, yes, definitely. So for a couple of bucks, we'll watch Sunshine.
Oh, that's a good buy there.
The Pop Shot, MASH. The 2-disc special edition, all right?
Yeah.
Not for you, it's for me, but, you know, we reviewed the film for you. And, of course, this one I picked up, this was a buck. They've got a bin full of films that are a dollar. Now, on David Stratton's review show, Margaret Pomerantz tried to refer to this as a masterpiece, and David Stratton tore her apart for it. Mm. So I thought, it's about time I finally watched it. This is Francis Ford Coppola's most recent film, Youth Without Youth, which got really mixed reviews when it came out. And I'm really curious to see it, because I used to be a huge Coppola fan.
Yeah.
And he's kind of not as big with me. Not as big with me as he used to be, but I still am always curious about his stuff.
Yeah.
So, Delta says he loves MASH. Yes, so do I. Delta also says Sunshine was good, really strange.
Yeah.
Pop Shot says, sorry guys, need to go. Blockbuster needs me. All right, yes, I know Pop Shot's in the Randwick area, so run down there after the show. Well, what did you get?
This is a selection that is both mine and Celine's, so I needed to make that very stressful. Half the choices are mine and half are hers. I'm not going to go into who got what. I'm just going to read them out. Now, we have redefined the idea of video nasties. The things we went into that store to buy were the ones that you cannot get on DVD anymore. So, with the exception of Steam Boy, which is one of the most expensive animated films of all time and definitely worth viewing, all the rest of mine are pretty junky. So, get ready. We have the original Reanimator, which I have struggled very hard to find on DVD and managed to have it now, which is awesome. We have Bad Taste, because everyone
I didn't
own.
Even see that one there. I would have bought that one.
Oh man, that was like the first pick we got. We have Pet Cemetery, which is just
quite like this. It's kind of B grade, but it's good.
Oh dude, it's B grade. It's B grade. That's important. We have the original Texas Chainsaw
Massacre.
Is
that the 2-disc or the 1-disc?
It's the 1-disc.
Okay, but it's still the same.
I actually just wanted this version because I hate the cover of the new one. I think it's really, really dumb. So
I agree.
Was just happy to get that. We have Scanners 1, 2, and 3.
Of course, the only one that's worth watching is 1, but 2 and 3 are...
Wash your mouth out. They may be terrible, but they're video nasty, and nothing more. Okay, and then we have probably the prizes of our collection, which are Zombie Flesh Eaters. Now, this is a particularly rank film, if you are a fan of rank films. We have Burial Ground, which is same category, same type of film. And then we have
and this one I've seen. Yeah.
We have Zombie Holocaust.
Excellent stuff.
Yes. This film, for anyone that doesn't know, had so many problems after it was done that they actually ended up in court and had to bring in the cast members because people thought they were dead. interesting film. But that's my collection, and I look forward to nailing
through
those.
And just as a sub note here, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a much maligned film now because they go, oh, it's so dated and everything else. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is a really excellent film.
Yeah,
I agree. Really well made.
It was one of those few dice rolls Tobe Hooper got right. Yeah. You can argue with me all you want.
No, I agree. It's the one he got right. Tobe Hooper has done some trash. Life Force, Invaders from Mars.
Yeah, look, I want to make it very clear to people that he falls into the same category as Mr. Cunningham, Sean Cunningham, who is the original person for Friday the 13th. Yeah. Which is, if you've seen that series, you know that this man got really lucky. The man has done nothing else of any credit to his life apart from these films.
In his life? That's a bit severe, isn't
it? Well, all right. Cool. He may have had kids and got married. He probably happy and probably actually really likes what he does. And I don't hate you for that, man. I'm just saying that, you know, Friday the 13th 1 was a piece of history and an amazing film. The rest of them, we tend to forget about. Except for 2. I'll give 2.
Well, 2 is the birth of Jason, really. Yeah. So, you know, you got to kind of give it credit where credit is due. Anyway, so we've been up very early because we went down to this thing like at opening because we wanted to see what was there. And I tell you what, it was funny because when we got there, there weren't many people, but literally within half an hour.
Yeah, you got stuck. We were in and out.
I was in line for ages trying to get to the counter, man. It was just driving me crazy. Yeah. Anyway, so that was kind of our adventure this morning. We got a lot of viewing out of it. Now, you know, some of these, you get what you get. They're ex-rentals, which means some of these may be scratched beyond use. And, you know, we'll try. But, you know, for a few bucks each, it's a great way of building up that DVD collection.
Oh, absolutely. And just to have them in your collection.
I just wish the Blu-rays had been a bit cheaper. There's a few Blu-rays.
Yeah,
there.
I'll admit I was a little annoyed at that. I can get them cheaper at JB, and that makes me really upset because I didn't go there for that. But anyway, that's all right.
So anyway, we'll move on now. And now that we've by the way, somebody in the chat room said they cannot find my Tumblr page. It is David McVeigh. So let me spell this out for you. D-A-V-I-D, obviously. Yeah. It's all one word, though. M-C-V-A-Y. So D-A-V-I-D, M-C-V-A-Y. Dot Tumblr, T-U-M-B-L-R, dot com. Okay? So that's the Tumblr page. We'll put a link in Geek, actually. It's not really up and running yet because, as I say, I'm filling in back catalog. I'm trying to backdate them all. Mm-hmm. Once I've got the 19 films that I've already seen there, and I'm putting like a paragraph on each one, those that really strike me as more than that will get more of a description, and the ones that get a really big description will get linked to Geek, actually. But I will put a link to Tumblr on Geek, actually, over this next couple of days once I've got Tumblr kind of up and running. So... Mm. It's still very fresh and new at this point.
Yeah.
But it will give you an idea of what I've been watching, and you can follow along.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reason why I'm doing it.
Tumblr is just
a free blog site. So it's just a very easy one. The thing I like about Tumblr is that it has a really good free iPhone app.
Yeah.
Which allows you to...
That one, maybe?
Yeah, which basically allows you to even use the camera, so you can literally take a shot on your iPhone, write a description, it puts it straight as a Tumblr post.
Oh, nice.
So it's all interlinked with your iPhone. It doesn't work very well on iPad because it doesn't have all those features, but on the iPhone, it's a really good app.
Nice.
But I'm still working on the webpage because I'm doing back entries. Okay, so this is kind of like a little personal thing I'm doing, and as I said on the site, this is not a critical site. None of these reviews on the Tumblr site none of these films are being watched with the critical eye. Mm-hmm. For critical eye stuff, you come and listen to this show.
Oh, nice.
And for that, we are going to come to our feature review.
Okay.
And our feature review this week is for the new Tony Scott effort, as Josh liked to put it.
No, I was saying that I was actually going to make a joke that I didn't feel there was much effort put into that, but that's kind of a lie. I take that back.
Okay. Let's have a look at the trailer. Actually, no, let's not have a look. Let's talk about the description first. Unstoppable, directed by Tony Scott, and for those who have been under a rock and don't know who Tony Scott is, his most recent film was Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, but he's also the director of...
He also did Good Things.
He also did Good Things. He did Beverly Hills Cop 2. He did Top Gun. He did one of my favorite submarines. Marine films. He did the Crimson Tide, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Tony Scott's done some good stuff as well. But in the recent years, from about Domino onwards, I would say, he hasn't really done much to impress.
Wow, yeah. That was a film.
Yeah, Domino was not one that I was very keen on. Mm. Now, this film is written by Mark Baumbach, and it stars Denzel Washington, Chris Pine, Rosario Dawson, Ethan Suplee, and Kevin Dunn. Now, the description on IMDb was quite literally this. It was literally a sentence, and it just said, "With an unmanned, half-mile-long freight train barreling toward a city, a veteran engineer and a young conductor race against the clock to prevent a catastrophe."
It's so 90s.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the trailer.
I'm Will Coulson. We're working together to train 1206.
Is there a problem?
I just don't like working at a damn daycare center.
I don't like working at a retirement home, so.
All right.
This ain't training. In training, they just give you an F. Out here, you get killed. Married?
Sort of. It's a long story. You married?
Got two beautiful daughters.
Unmanned train rolling into a highly populated area with no air brakes?
Yeah.
1206, 1206,
what's up?
There's an unmanned train on the northbound tracks.
It's coming straight at us.
What are we worried about in terms of cargo?
8 freight cars of hazardous chemicals. We're not just talking about a train. We're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler building.
I need to know where that train is.
We're not sure.
We'll find out.
Watch out!
It gets worse.
I've got 150 students coming in on track 16.
We have been told to anticipate an event radius 20 to 45 miles.
The only way to stop that kind of power, grab it by the tail, gun in the opposite direction.
Are you in or you out?
What, you want to kill yourself, you do it alone.
All right, you do what you want.
Wait.
I'm not risking this company just because some engineer wants to play hero.
Not for you. Not doing it for you.
This is your conductor. We're gonna run this bitch down.
Tell your sister I love you both.
We're gonna be coming in too hot.
We just lost our brakes.
Hey!
Close your eyes if you want.
You got a real knack for inspiring confidence.
Okay, so that's Unstoppable. For our audio listeners, you can check that trailer out by going to our show notes.
Can I just say, the trailer is the name itself is incredibly misleading because they do actually stop it.
Spoilers!
I just wanted to get out there and say that. You lied to me.
And the first
thing, not Unstoppable.
And the
at
first
all.
Thing we will say is, of course, it is inspired by true events. And if you actually go and look up the true events, it's nowhere near as dramatic as the film would make you believe. You know, a train went out of control. They backed another train into it. They slowed it down. They stopped it. Okay, end of story. You know, yeah. But the film, they had to, you know, make it much more than it actually was.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to say that I didn't hate the film. I actually kind of thought it was kind of fun. You know, it's, I came home, my lovely wife Katie says, what was the film like? And I actually said to her, I said, it was a Roadrunner cartoon with train sets, you know, because that's exactly what it was. It was like the first 20 minutes in particular is like boys playing with train sets. It's all big machinery and backing into things and changing gateways. And, you know, it's like changing the tracks. And it was all very reverential to all the machinery, you know? Yeah. And so you sit there and go, okay, so they're playing with their train sets.
Yeah.
Just on a very big scale. And then once the film starts to get onto the runaway train part, it literally is like a Roadrunner cartoon.
Yeah.
You can't take any of it seriously.
Yeah.
And if you take it in that vein, it's kind of fun because you just kind of sit there and go, this is stupid, you know?
Yeah.
But as a serious thriller, no, it doesn't quite hit the mark. It's no Speed, let's put it that way, you know?
I have to say that I was very incredibly aware that I was watching a film. I actually felt quite detached at a lot of times. It's so generic that the parody part of me kicks in before the film watcher does. Like, I sit there and it's like, I can't take what you're doing seriously because it's just so incredibly unlikely. Like, it's like, it's obviously not based on true events. Like, I mean, it's based on true events.
No, it actually does, to be fair, it says in the beginning credits, it says inspired by true events.
Oh, of course, yes.
You know, it's like, we're not really, this is not really what happened.
Exactly. You know? And as a thriller, I just want to say, look, Tony Scott has, we've got to stop giving this guy any credit at all because you have to start giving, like, he has just lost what was Tony Scott for me. Mm. There is no emotions in the film anymore. I don't care about any of the characters. And his explanations and his trying to fit a storyline and characters that actually... that you wanted to care about because of their backgrounds and the setups to this, I actually just turned around and I actually felt mildly insulted. As a viewer, I was like, fuck off. Like, you are just using any generic filler here. And it's just, if you want me to take this film seriously and if you want me to give it a good rating, then it's got to be more than freaking 90s trash. And it's like, at least 90s trash was camp, you know, and silly. This was 100% dead serious. And it's like, every character was a massive caricature of, like, a type of personality. Yeah.
I'm also getting a little bit tired of the Jerry Bruckheimer-style dialogue.
Exactly.
They can't just say, it's a big train or it's a 28-car train. She has to say, it's a half a mile. It's a missile the size of a Chrysler building, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, this is Bruckheimer dialogue. This is like, you know, let's make it all much bigger than it really is.
And I know that, and I'll give you the ability to retort to this, but I am just incredibly sick of Denzel Washington playing Denzel Washington. You can strap any skin you want on him. The man has not changed his acting style in like 15 years.
Although, I will give the man credit for one thing, which is in this film, at least he had a little bit of a sense of humor. He wasn't being the totally sincere, overly sincere Denzel that he's been in so many films of late. In this one, there's a slightly lighter side to him. Yeah. And I do credit Chris Pine for that, because they play off each other quite well.
Yeah.
So I think that we saw a slightly lighter Denzel in this film than we have. Taking Pelham 1-2-3, Man on Fire, you know, all these films.
Yeah, yeah, but like the one you're missing in between is Training Day, which is basically the attitude he's playing. That whole scene at the start, I was like, am I just dreaming, or do I feel like I'm watching the start of Training Day with him sitting down at the table reading the newspaper?
King Konging, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, it was somewhere between that and I'm going to say, not Pelican Brief, Bone Collector. That was what he was playing, just an amalgamation of those two people. It's like the witty crime guy mixed with the slightly sassy, does everything, you know, his own way kind of a guy. And it's like, just between the two of them, I'm just like, Denzel, just like shoot someone or something, or be hard ass, or just do.
And to be fair, everybody is pretty much playing just, they're pretty much walking this film. Even Chris Pine, who I like a lot, the guy's got a lot he's got a lot of credits up his sleeve with me. He's quite fine in
and
this
you
film.
Know what, like, I mean, he's probably him and the character I aptly named Super Hick are my favorite characters in this film. Chris Pine does a decent job playing who he is, but I was saying to Dave, to me, he's very much become our generation's version of Bruce Willis. Like, he's the guy that we just like to watch getting the crap kicked out of him.
It's no Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
But it's a lot. He's a lot of fun in this film, and, you know, he holds his own.
And look, he does the job perfectly, and I have no problem with that. I want to see him change up things. I'm very interested to see him in anything he's going to do, and I will go to
And
anything.
You're right. The guy with the mullet and the welder. Oh, yeah. The welder is brilliant.
The welder is just the coolest character in this film. He's just
all about precision.
He's got the 70s hairdo, and he's got the big-ass tinted ruby style glasses, and he drives a giant, I kid you not, red pickup, and he is just so cool. He oozes cool. He runs up onto the set, and my favorite bit of the entire film is when he runs up and he just goes, I'm here because of Connie, and just this nowhere cop in the middle of nowhere is like, you know Connie? And that's it. They just let him through because he's just that badass. It's just like the hair and the glasses, you just don't fuck with someone that cool.
Yeah. Now, Connie, by the way, is Rosario Dawson's character, who Rosario Dawson's pretty much playing herself as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, Rosario Dawson playing herself is actually always, in my opinion, quite interesting, because I quite like her. Yeah. She's got a nice energy about her, but she doesn't do anything spectacular in this. Nobody does anything spectacular in this film. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, it is a pretty straightforward film. Now, let's talk about Tony Scott a little bit and the joke we were making about the effort. Tony Scott has decided that shooting about 7 shots of the train at various angles going exactly the same speed is enough to then just re-edit into the film many times over.
Yeah.
So anytime we need a shot of the train, he just cuts back to the same shots over and over and over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah, and like ridiculously obviously.
Dude. Yes.
It's like you're looking especially at the shot and you're
especially
like,
the on-the-track train going over the top.
Yeah, or maybe they are different sets, and maybe it's just the trains are that boring.
I think pretty much they are. But
like, no offense, no. Let me explain. The actual ability that, like, the one thing that he really got right in this film, and the one thing I will give him credit for, is he really does bring home how incredibly powerful these devices are. Mm. Like, when things couple together, I love the use of sound. Like, when things couple together, the sound is way louder than it needs to be. But realistically, if you're in that situation or you've ever been around trains, they are that freaking loud. When they couple, it's a bang.
And one of the most effective scenes, I think, was where they actually couple with the train and the freight car gets the leak and all the pellets of grain are flying past them, and you've got all that sound of all the grain kicking around, and they can't see anything, and you've got the sparks coming from the coupling, and that's a really effective scene because there's so much happening in there and the chaos that scene. But the problem is there's not enough of that.
Well, at that, and also the fact that I just feel like the story was, it shouldn't have been inspired by events. If you want to do a proper film and, like, try and create a storyline out of it, this Bruckheimer-esque crap that you tried to bring out.
And this is not a Bruckheimer film, let's make that clear.
Exactly. is just too much. It's like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is just silly. Like,
right, and the reason why I say Bruckheimer is because Tony Scott made a whole bunch of films with Bruckheimer, and that's now washed off onto him.
You know, exactly.
And so he just he carries that with him, even though he's not doing Bruckheimer anymore.
This film reeks of 90s excess with nothing to back it up. Like, there's no soul, there's no decent, witty characters, there's no, like, it's just too fast.
Yeah, and that being said, it's a far better film than taking a Pelham 123, which was Tony Scott's last train set film. Mm. But it's still not a particularly brilliant film.
But the other thing that I did actually kind of like about the film was the fact that, like, I feel that even though it is kind of a 90s film, I wasn't bored. I want to get that across. Mm. Like, I wasn't bored. I wasn't sitting there going, God, I want to get out of here. I think Tony Scott has to get it into his head that if you speed up a film and run it at 3 times its normal speed, it doesn't mean that you've won, okay? I'm not going to give you credit
for
that. Or
slowed it down so you get that staggery effect, is one of his favorite things. I can't stand it. I'm so over that effect. You know, I'm so over. He did that in Pelham as well. Over, it was the helicopter shots with that staggery slow motion. He's thinking, stop ramping the speed on the camera. Just leave it alone and just tell the story. If your story isn't strong enough to tell without all the camera tricks, it probably shouldn't have been made in the first place. You know?
Damn right.
And
couldn't have said it better.
Really what it comes down to is he's playing with a lot of tricks because stories just aren't that strong. Yeah. Look, with all of that being said, we would normally say at this point, would we recommend this film? Yeah. And I'm going to say that this is a DVD movie.
Absolutely. Look, I will say one thing. There's one more thing I want to get off my chest, which is the fact that I'm sorry if I've come across heavy-handed on this. I'm not actually sorry, but one thing I want to stress to Tony Scott is the only reason your films are still working is because you have that many contacts. You have big budgets. You have the best casting list you can have in the world because anyone will pick up your films.
Yeah.
And my problem with this is I'm not going to give you any respect for this film because if I had taken away Chris Pine, if I had put a worse actor in both those spots and I had lowered your budget, you would have had nothing.
Mm.
Okay? There is no substance to this film, and when I expect films with low budget or something, you have to put stuff in there to keep me going. Mm. And you can't ride the success of actors. And that's all this film feels
like
to
me. Look, the problem I have with this film is that there isn't a lot of suspense.
Yeah.
Because we kind of know what's going to happen. We know we're going to our two stars. Spoilers here.
Yeah.
We know our two stars are going to survive because they're the two stars, you know? Yeah. We know the trains aren't going to collide because that would make a good action film, summer blockbuster film.
Yeah.
So the suspense is gone, you know? And so we just kind of are now relying on pure characterization. Mm. And the pure characterizations aren't that strong.
Yeah.
So you kind of end up with a slightly weak film because you haven't got really much happening in the way. So for the first 20 minutes, it's fun watching all the trains because, look, I love trains, you know? And it's like watching a big train set. But after a while, it does. Luckily, the film is mercifully short.
Oh, wow.
It's only like 90 minutes long. It literally flies by in a heartbeat, right? And as I say, if you go in there and you are expecting, as I said at the beginning, a Roadrunner cartoon and don't expect anything of any depth, and expect it to be every cliche in the book, then you're going to get exactly that. And mm-hmm. that's fine. And that's why I say it's good DVD fodder. This is the sort of thing you and a bunch of friends might rent on DVD on a Saturday night with some popcorn and just kind of go and laugh at it. You know, and laugh at the silliness of the whole thing. Yeah. And in that situation, I think you've got a, you know, you've got a hell of a film on your hands. But yeah. as a film that you're going to go and see on the big screen, there are so many things you can go see right now that are so much better than this.
Yeah.
This film, one of the reasons we reviewed this film was the fact that it's an anomaly. It's this very odd film that is getting really mediocre reviews and yet has this huge score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's got this high score, but all the reviews are kind of like, yeah, kind of silly, kind of this, kind of that. It's like, but why is the score so high? You know? I just don't understand what this weirdness is. Like, they're giving him a pass, but then saying bad things about it.
Well, I think it's because of what I was just saying. It's like, if you leave all of the credit in there for him and you say, look, Denzel did a decent performance, Chris Pine did a decent performance, the story holds its own over its 90 minutes. Like, if you break it down to its individual parts, it's like, yeah, okay, it's a good film. But you can tell that all these people are watching this film and going, it feels soulless.
Yeah.
And for that,
it's not a film where you want to stand up and cheer at the end, you know, where you get to that moment where you go, yes, they did it. You know, and in the film, they're doing their best to try and make you feel that way with everybody else standing up and cheering, but you're not standing up and cheering because you're kind of going, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, no, because for me, it's not that, like, it's films like this that I can't give a pass because they're trying to do a serious version of what the 80s and 90s did as, not a joke, they believe in these films, they do, but as completely aware that it's a fictional situation. It's like when you bring that mentality and that concept onto a true event style story, I just start looking at you going, that's bad. It's just, you've taken the soul out of what was a brilliant act for these people. And I don't feel anything at the end of the film. When everybody's like, yay, and the train stopped, I'm like, great, cool, can we go now? Like, I mean, we all knew that was going
to
happen.
Absolutely. Now, just to delve into our chat room here for a minute, apparently, looking at the real story, if you actually go to it, the real event, the cause of the train getting away was exactly the same.
Absolutely.
So, and I have no problem with that at all. Yes, it's very plausible how that happened. Yeah. So that's all fine. But basically, he said, Delta Knight has said in our chat room, but compared to these guys, referring to us, I don't overthink a movie. I just turn my brain off and just watch it and take it at face value. And absolutely, and this is what I was saying. Look, had this been watched as one of the films I'm watching for the year and I was putting it on my Tumblr, I would have said, it's a Roadrunner cartoon. It was kind of fun and, you know, move on. Our job here is to be a little bit more critical about the film, and that's why we're doing this. And we're looking at the good and the bad and really trying to figure out what makes it work.
Look, I'm like these people. I mean, I can't hate it. It wasn't a bad film. I wouldn't turn around to the average Joe that watches every film that comes out and, you know, sort of really likes the films that I usually don't like. Go watch it.
Look, if you're if you thought The Expendables was a good film, then you're going to think this is a good film. This is in the same sort of class as that, where you go, it's just kind of a turn your brain off, don't think about it, because if you think about it, there are holes all over it. If you don't think about it at all, just take it completely at face value, you're probably going to have fun with it. You know what I mean? But it's not, I think, for a film to really be a great film, needs to work on both levels. It needs to work on the levels where you can have a lot of fun with it, but also leaves you with something. This is like Chinese food. You eat it, it's gone.
And
half an hour later, you're hungry.
I would never rent, watch it, or see it again. I've seen it once and it's there. Man.
Yeah, I may even watch it again when it comes out in DVD.
Oh, look, if it was on TV at some stage, maybe I'd watch it, but I don't have TV, so, you know.
It really was, as Delta Knight says and as you've said, it really is 90s. It feels like a 90s film, absolutely. Yeah. And there's no doubt about it. But as I say, I think it's a rental. I'm not going to say don't see it because there are fun things about it. Chris Pine is always watchable. There are fun things about it. If you like that whole Michael Bay, Jerry Bruckheimer style dialogue and you know, that whole Tony Scott fast paced stuff, then you're going to get a kick out of it. But, you know, as an overall, I don't think it's a cinema film.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
All right. And I assume you're going to say,
same thing. Absolutely.
All right. Let's move into news. Entertainment buzz this week. We have a star of the Total Recall movie.
The new one.
The Len Wiseman remake of Total Recall, which I don't know if they're actually going to remake the movie or if they're going back to the source story. Yeah. They haven't actually said. It sounds like they're remaking the Paul Verhoeven movie, which I think is a mistake. But anyway, Colin Farrell.
I heard about that.
Is going to be the Arnold Schwarzenegger character.
You know what?
I think it could work.
No. More importantly, one of my biggest gripes and one of the biggest flaws, in my opinion, of the film, Total Recall, the original, is actually
Arnold.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Like, the film was trying to be an intelligent film, and when you do something like lead with someone like him, and don't get me wrong, I do like the film. I think it's a great, fun romp.
Absolutely, but and that's
so
all it is.
Stupid.
Look, and Total Recall is, like, unstoppable. It is a comic book.
Yeah.
It's a cartoon. You know?
Well, look, it's a comic book, but at the same time, there's so much innovation in it, and there's so much drive. It was such a, like, they did so
visual
much
effects
work.
Were amazing for
well,
its time.
Like Oscar.
Oh, yeah, that was the year that the Oscars decided no other nominations. They actually just gave it to Total Recall.
Exactly.
They said no other film came close to what Total Recall
and this
achieved.
This is what I'm saying. The film was groundbreaking whether or not you like it or not. But every time he's on screen and trying to deliver dialogue or trying to do a clever scene, like the scene where he's talking to himself on the video and stuff like that, it's all badly done and really badly voiced.
Yeah, because
like
the bigger problem is that Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually a terrible actor.
Oh, I know.
And nobody's ever really called him on this.
Exactly,
you know?
But this is why when I was, like, that was one of the things. When I was watching Minority Report, I was thinking, look, Colin Farrell can easily be on board for this kind of stuff. And for that reason, I'm happy. I'm really excited to
I think Colin Farrell will actually bring some realism to it, which is what it desperately needs. Also in casting news this week, The Hobbit is starting to finally move ahead.
Yeah.
Both Ian McKellen as Gandalf and Andy Serkis are now confirmed. They are returning to their roles. We know that what's his name, is playing Bilbo. Martin Freeman has been cast as Bilbo. And now they're actually saying that they're also in discussions with Saruman, Christopher Lee.
Yeah, Christopher Lee.
And he does want to do it, and he will come back as Saruman, health depending.
Oh, of course. That was what I was about to say. Yeah. Look, the man is old.
Yeah, he's old, and he really does want to do it. But let's face it, the man is getting on, and he had trouble even doing Lord of the Rings. Yeah. So, but yes, he is on board. So there is also a really interesting thing about the casting, which is that Elijah Wood is returning. Now, Frodo's not in The Hobbit. So I'm not sure how they're bringing him in, but Elijah Wood apparently is also been talking. So there is a word that Elijah Wood is coming back. So I'm not sure if he's possibly something to do with the second half. You know how they're doing two films, and the other one is like the bridge between the two, so there might be more of him in that. Who knows? Because from memory, if memory serves me right, and I've read all the books, Saruman's not in The Hobbit either. So,
well, maybe it's some sort of like 5-minute wrap-up thing like there was at the end of Star Wars 3.
Maybe.
Sorry, I just choked.
Okay, now... this was probably my favorite news story of the week. James Cameron has been at it again. Now, if we remember about 5 months ago, James Cameron came out and bagged out Piranha 3D, basically saying that all films being converted to 3D was the death of 3D and how dare they do it. Yeah. Well, he's now basically come out and slammed Battleship, the movie, basically saying that Hollywood is completely bankrupt of ideas, and it's films like Battleship that are going to be the death of everything. This all comes from a magazine that he did an interview with. Now, the magazine, I can't actually read the exact quotes because it's Spiegel magazine and it's all in German. You can follow the link. If you speak German, you could read the interview. But Slash Film does have some news about that, basically saying that he really is really against all the things like Ouija's being made into a movie and all. And he basically says this is going to kill. He says it's a crisis in Hollywood at the moment. And I agree with him. I do agree with him. And that's the thing. The scary part is I agree with a lot of what he's saying. I just think he's a little bit of a madman because he goes on these rants. But I do agree. I think that
the man has the ability to smash an entire industry with one flick of a hand and a word, man. I mean, like,
and let's say that Universal must be kind of pissed because they rolled $200 million into Battleship. You know what I mean? And it's like, stop it, man. You know? But so we wait with bated breath to see what Cameron comes out with next.
Yeah.
Cameron likes to bag.
Oh, I do. I do always like his little explosions.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're always
get in there and rip them apart, James.
Yeah.
Now, we have one trailer for you. We talked about this film a few weeks ago, but we didn't actually show the trailer because there wasn't a lot of dialogue in it, and it wouldn't have been good for our audio listeners, but we did say go have a look at it. This week, a new trailer has come out for the film Battle Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this trailer is actually...
I was in from the first trailer, too.
I really liked the look of the first trailer, but after seeing this trailer, and I said to Josh before the show started, I'm getting a District 9 vibe here. Not that it's the same kind of film, but it's that whole idea that, wow, this is something unique, it's different, and it's kind of the sleeper, you know. And I think we might have this year's District 9 surprise on our hands. Mm-hmm. So let's have a look at this trailer. Now, I will warn those who are listening to the video. The audio may not get this, but the video, there's a couple of pops in this. I don't know what happened to the encode. There's a few pops in the sound, but bear with us. And here's the trailer for Battle Los Angeles.
Wednesday morning, 94.5 with the Surf Rider Morning Surf Report.
Hard morning, Staff Sergeant. Staff Sergeant.
We now know that meteors will land off the coast of different cities.
They gotta be parallel to the deck. That's the whole thing with these bars.
Okay. Hey. Come on, you guys, you're killing me.
Good luck, rookie.
Small cluster of meteors is predicted to enter our atmosphere.
Scientists are scrambling to try and understand it.
Evacuations are now underway.
Two or three meteors just impacted.
Oh my God. It appears that there's something like shadowy figures.
I think I'm gonna head back now. Everyone needs to get out of here right now. Lucas, if you could just come back, please. Oh my God.
Place for its resources, you wipe out the indigenous population. Right now, we are being colonized.
What the hell is that thing?
Oh my God.
Fall back! Fall back!
How many of you?
Five of us, three kids.
We have civilians coming out!
Can't take them, we got no room!
Wait! Kids!
How good does that fucking look?
I've got to say that I'm totally with IMR Space or in with this one, which is that this could be really good or really lame.
Absolutely. Look, this could be the next Skyline.
You know what? It'll either be the next District 9, right? Or it'll be the next Monsters.
I think it looks better than Monsters. It looks like it's got more action than Monsters, if nothing else. But no, I think it's. I think we could be surprised by this one. I think this could be the sleeper hit of the year. Because look, it's come out of nowhere. Let's face it. You know what I mean? We started seeing trailers for this literally a couple months ago, and it's like, what the hell? How'd this just sneak through? Delta Knight says, I know Skyline was such a massive joke, I laughed so hard.
That's another one I've watched.
You watched Skyline, did you?
I watched Skyline recently. Wow.
Mm.
That's a mess of a film.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... I got to the end and it's like the twist that everybody was saying was so amazing. I finished it and I was like... Yeah, you're not getting a sequel.
Actually, it looks like they are. But anyway.
Oh, really?
Well, they made a fortune because the film cost $10 million to make.
Yeah.
You know, they made a fortune on that film. Of course, they're going to get a sequel. Mm-hmm. Now, superhero news. Edgar Wright, director of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, has now said that now that Scott Pilgrim is behind him, he is now working on a new draft of the Ant-Man script, which he'd already written. So it looks like Ant-Man may actually move ahead finally. Yeah. So I'll be curious. And IMR Space says the twist in Skyline sucked.
Yeah.
So yes, agreed. And the other good news that came out this week was that James Bond 23 with Daniel Craig is back on track. So this film was shelved because of the MGM money woes. Apparently the money woes are behind them, and they have now officially announced that they are going into production by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. So they are back on track.
Yeah.
And Sam Mendes is still attached to direct. So Bond 23 should be out next year. if all goes well. But I tell you what, it's still quite a few months until production starts and a lot can happen.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that little article that we talked about in the break between shows and a little bit at the end of Geek Actually, which was about the Blu-ray players. This was an article that was actually Subtraction.com posted up, and Slash Film carried a little bit of their own comments on this as well. But if you go back to the original article, basically what the guy is saying was that the standard, he was saying that, you know, for all the beauty that is Blu-ray and all the wonderful high defness and all this sort of stuff, he started to really think about, now this article is written by a guy called, I'm going to massacre this name, sorry, but it's Koivin, I think it is. And basically he started to say, you know what? He never had to put a firmware upgrade on his Blu-ray player, on his DVD player. And yet he seems to be having to put firmware updates on his Blu-ray player every week.
Right.
He never had to, he said that the concept of Blu-ray where you put a disc in and have to wait 30 to 45 seconds for it to boot and then 30 seconds between menus to load up. And he says it's taken away that casual viewing sense. Whereas a DVD, you just chuck it in, push play, it's going. You know what I mean? He says with the Blu-ray, everything seems very calculated. You have to plan everything.
Damn
he said, right. And so he's basically starting to query and the concept that the technology behind Blu-ray is a little flawed.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a format that was rushed into production, not quite finished, not quite there yet. And people are just, and then of course they had the whole high def war that happened between it and the HD DVD. And so he's basically saying that yes, you know, the question is, was DVD good enough?
Yeah.
On the most part, and do we really need to sit there and go through all of this with this new technology?
Well, look, I mean,
it's an interesting debate.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I am still of the belief, and I think people like Delta will stand with me on this, is the fact that, look, I mean, you guys can do whatever you want to this. Reality is they're all going down the tubes the second we get decent internet.
See, and that's another point. He doesn't raise this in this question, in this article, but there's a point that I've got, which is, should we have taken the step from DVD straight to digital?
Well, we
and
kind
skipped
of,
another disc format, you know what I mean?
I think the Blu-ray thing was also, like, there are still a large section of the world that isn't like us, Dave, and people that just want to be able to buy a DVD on their way home or whatever. Mm. And, like, people like this, they don't necessarily have to keep updating their devices because a lot of them don't have them plugged into the net.
Mm.
So, like, I mean, realistically, these people will continue to
buy that. But see, that's the problem, though. If you're not connected to the net, okay, because the discs themselves keep introducing the new technology that's moving along. So if you put a disc in and you haven't updated the firmware on your Blu-ray, there are going to be features that don't work because you haven't updated the firmware. So you have to continually. So if you don't have it connected to the net, which mine isn't, what you have to do is you have to go to the website, download the firmware patch, put it onto a disc, put the disc into the machine, and then update the firmware the old-fashioned way, right? I don't want to have to do that every week. You know what I mean?
I have a PlayStation 3. I don't have to do that.
Agreed. So I'm on a standalone, though.
Look, I still believe in disc format because I love having that wall, right? But as I have an Apple TV now and I'm buying things through iTunes, look, my iTunes library is starting to become the equivalent of a thing.
I agree with Callison, though. Callison's in our chat room says people still want physical media. People want to own their movies. They don't trust the net. And I agree with that. I actually still want to own my movies. I like physical media. I like getting the bonus features. I like the nice artwork on the boxes. It's like records in the old days. You know, you've got your movies, you know?
I completely disagree because I am finding so many, like, the amount of Apple TVs I'm selling through my store is ridiculous. I can't keep them in stock. Right, so people do want.
Do they want it as a supplement or do they want it as a replacement? That's the question.
Look, the reality is, Dave, I would switch to digital media if one thing happened, if the prices started to line up, and they don't yet. That's the realistic reason I haven't changed, because realistically I can grab a TV series for $20, I can get it on iTunes for $56. It's like realistically if you drop the price down, I'll pull it down on my I use half my data cap at the moment. And that's including broadcasting shows every week. Realistically, if you make the prices fall in line, if you drop the prices below the in line, people will switch over.
Well, theoretically, the price should be lower than physical media anyway, because you're not paying for the packaging.
It's a nice belief.
Yeah, but that I'm saying, if you go by retail,
the concept of retail is
that as soon as you get rid of the packaging, get rid of the brick and mortar, get rid of the rent, get rid of the staff,
yep.
theoretically prices should be cheaper anyway.
Totally agree with you. And look, I mean, realistically, I'm sorry, guys, I disagree. People don't necessarily want physical media. Most people aren't like us. Most people don't give a crap about the special features.
See, that would be an interesting statistic. I would like to see, you say you can't keep up with the demands on Apple TV, right? Yeah. Then what we want to do is find out the stats from how many DVD and Blu-ray players are being sold from your AV department.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, there will always be that, man, but it's because realistically no one makes a drive for the thing. Like, no one used to do iTunes at all. Why? Because you'd walk into a store and get a CD for $12.99 and you'd go to iTunes and it would be $36.
Mm. Realistically, see, for me,
as the prices drop.
For me, I will rent from iTunes because, to me, renting, you're giving it back anyway. Yeah, yeah. So I would rent from iTunes and I buy the physical media.
Mm.
You know, the only digital copies I have are ones that come as digital copies when I buy the media.
Perfect example. I completely agree with Calisynth. People do not buy PC games in store anymore. Why? Because they can get it for $5 off the net.
Mm.
And you watch. Steam is taking over the PC world. Why? Because the prices are realistic.
Mm.
Your price goes out of fashion. Those 20-buck games you buy in a store, you can get for $5 online. I bought Crysis, the full version, completely updated, everything in it, for literally $15. You can't match that.
Yeah, and then you look at that as with the Mac world, you've got the Mac App Store as well, which is bringing that side of it.
Yeah.
Microsoft wants to create their own App Store, which will actually decrease the need for physical media for things like Office and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
look, on the software side of things, on computer side of things, on things like Xbox Live Marketplace,
mm-hmm.
I think games are all going to go digital.
Yeah.
I think we're going to eliminate discs altogether in games. Now, whether or not we're going that way with the average Joe, let's face it, the gamer is a slightly more tech-savvy person than the moviegoer.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering...
Netflix is doing very well in America.
It is, yes. Netflix streaming is doing very well as well. Yep.
Netflix is doing a great amount of money in over there. I mean, iTunes is more than... I wouldn't exactly call it above the water. It's, you know, miles. Yeah,
the problem you have with Netflix streaming, though, is, of course, something is on streaming and then it goes away. So it's not like you have permanent access to it at any time.
Mm.
As an example, all right, Disney is releasing Tron Legacy. Okay, they decide they don't want you to see Tron because they're trying to market Tron Legacy, right? So they pull all physical media versions of Tron, the original.
Yeah.
Now, I've still got Tron because I bought it on disc, and I can watch Tron because, you know, I can do it. If I wanted to watch Tron at the moment as a Netflix stream or as a digital version, it's nowhere to be seen.
Dave, my argument to your whole situation is all those people that were denied that copy, where'd they get it from?
That's true. They downloaded it illegally. But they downloaded it off the net.
And that's the point.
Well, no,
the
not everybody is, did.
It's available.
Mom and dad down the road didn't download the torrent because they wouldn't
imagine
know how,
their son did.
They wouldn't know how to.
Their son would have been like, I can get it for you. Where is it coming from? Oh, you don't need to know.
You don't need to know.
Look, I mean, realistically, dude, it's only a step away. And people do learn really quickly when it's something that will save them time and money. And
true.
Look, I mean, I just think that the idea that physical media is going to stick around is like the idea that, you know, mini disc was going to outweigh the disc because it was smaller. I mean, realistically, physical media is still physical media.
I think physical media is here for a while yet.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely. Don't think that I'm not aware of
that.
I think the outside of the
geek bubble that we all live in, I think we underestimate how many physical media discs are actually sold to the average, to the civilian, let's say, who doesn't download films, doesn't have iTunes, doesn't care about digital media. They want a disc to put into, as an example, my lovely wife Katie's father.
Yeah.
Doesn't have net access, and he loves his DVD player. No Blu-ray, still DVD, and he just goes down and he buys DVDs, right? And that is the average person on the street, and they're still buying DVDs. They're not even buying the new media. They're just buying DVDs.
Yeah, look, DVD sales are still there, and they will be for a very long time.
And DVDs have also dropped in price so considerably.
Yeah,
I mean, Blu-rays are dropping now, but DVDs, I mean, you get the same film on DVD as Blu-ray. You go over I'm looking at a Blu-ray, and it's like $30. I'm going, oh, I should buy that. And I walk over to the DVD stand, and they're just $12.
Yeah.
And you go, crap. You know, it's like, so, yeah, the DVD prices have just dropped through the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. Was Tilton Knight saying, fuck yeah, my sister that kills laptops and hates Apple because she kills them all. She torrents.
Yeah.
Is the torrents killing her laptops, are they?
No, but, you know, like...
She shouldn't be torrenting anyway. It's illegal. No, it's not. I'm joking, guys. I don't care. Download what you want. I'm not encouraging the act of piracy. Okay. All right. There are many legal torrents out there, believe it or not. All right. We're going to move into our list of five. I got it right here. That's good. We are in tune with our feature review. We're going to do five movies on a moving vehicle. Now, I got to say, I actually, in doing this list, was coming across with so many of them that I kind of went, well, this isn't actually a top five as such for me. It's more like, here's five good ones.
Okay.
All right? Because there are others that we could mention. Yeah. All right? And
it's not one of those categories where they're usually Oscar-winning films. So, my list is very much similar to yours.
And it'd be very interesting because when I first proposed this list, Josh actually went, but there's such a limited number of films. So I'd be very interested to see how we actually go on this. So,
well, I took not some liberties, but I kind of reorganized the way I was going to do this. So, yeah, we'll see how we go.
All right, so let's do this. I'll start us off this week. My number five is The Hunt for Red October.
Okay.
Sean Connery film.
I guess it's a moving vehicle.
It's a moving vehicle. It's a
very
submarine.
Slow moving vehicle.
Sure, but it's a submarine. It's moving. It's all set on there. And, you know, I thought Hunt for Red October, as with Crimson Tide, I thought were both really good films. But I think my personal preference was The Hunt for Red October.
Fair enough.
So there you go. There's my number five.
Yeah.
Your number five?
My number five is Gone in 60 Seconds, the remake.
The remake.
Because
okay.
I thought as car chases and moving and things like that, it was much more full on, in my
opinion. It's also a better film. Even though I didn't like Gone in 60 Seconds very much, it's a better film than the original.
Yeah.
The original is a classic in its own right because of the fact that at the time there had been no car crash sequence like that film.
Yeah.
But that's all there is. There is no film. It's just a car crash. So, right. Okay, my number two is the early Steven Seagal film, Under Siege.
Which
is all set aboard a battleship, as we know.
Yeah.
And I think it still stands probably as his best film.
Yeah.
Ever. So I really enjoyed that. I actually watched that not so long ago. I really enjoyed it again.
Oh, absolutely, man. I own that on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
My number four is a film that I don't particularly... I don't like or hate. I keep rewatching it, and I seethe at it, but I also really enjoy it. It's called Turbulence.
Ray Liotta film.
Quite
like that one.
Exactly. Like, I mean, the ending is silly. The idea of a woman landing a plane with no idea of how to do it and pressing the autopilot button, and apparently that just does it.
Haven't seen Airport 1975.
Yeah, look, I mean, yes, okay, maybe planes are this good, but the amount of tension you manage to throw into a sequence where a lady just basically presses the power button. Yeah, cool. But the film switches gears so quickly, and it is a horror film more than a thriller.
Well, it's a horror film structure. It's really interesting when you look at the structure, because it's not really a horror
Ray
film.
Ray Liotta is actually fucking creepy.
He is in a lot of them. It's those eyes.
Yeah. In this particular film, he threw me completely. I had no idea when I walked into it what I was going to get.
It was Lauren Holly, wasn't it?
Female
lead? I think Actually, not a bad film. Look, it's trash. It's one of those 90s films that we're saying that Unstoppable is like, but it's actually one of the slightly better ones.
Thought about Money Train, but when you actually think about Money Train, how much time do they actually spend on the train?
Sorry, Delta Knight threw in Money Train in our chat.
Just gonna put that out there. That was actually why I canned it off my list, because I was like, technically, they only spend kind of the last bit on the train.
That's right. For any sort of list that we do like this, if we do something specific like a claustrophobic film, or the majority of the film, or a good chunk of the film has to take place in that idea. Mm. All right, my number three is a film I don't even know if you've seen. It's a 1970s film called Silver Streak with Gene Wilder, and it's, I think, probably one of the first films that Richard Pryor was in.
Oh.
And it is a comedy thriller basically about a guy who kind of has this fling with Jill Clayburgh on this train. He's on an Amtrak train.
Yeah.
And over the course of the film, there's people who are murdering people on the train and so forth. But what ends up happening is the train becomes, funnily enough, talking about our main feature film, a runaway.
Right.
And they're stuck on this train trying to stop this train. Now, unlike Unstoppable, this train crashes, and it's a spectacular crash for the 1970s. Beautifully handled. It's a very funny film, and it's actually a really good thriller at the same time. Really good film. If you haven't seen Silver Streak, well worth having a look at. All right, and spoilers for the ending, by the way.
My number three is Ronin. Which, look, I mean, like, the first half of the film is basically an action film, but the second, basically the entire second half is a ginormous car chase, and probably one of the most spectacular car chases ever put to screen, and I have seen all the old
that Steve and the McQueen. French Connection.
Exactly. Like, I mean, this film just boggles your mind. You think it's over so many times, and this car chase just keeps going.
And funnily enough, there's a connection there, because Ronan was directed by John Frankenheimer, who directed French Connection 2.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
There is a connection there.
Yeah.
Ronan's good choice.
Yeah.
Good film. My number two is, of course, an obvious choice, which is Speed.
Yeah.
I think Speed was... of course, a knockoff of Die Hard when it came out, but in many ways, much more enjoyable in some ways than Die Hard, just because of its sheer kinetic energy that film has going for it. And I really enjoyed the first Speed.
Yeah.
And also was kind of the film that gave us, even though she was in Demolition Man first, it was the film that really gave us Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, well, look, it's my number two as well. The film is, like you said, very kinetic. It's so fast-paced. You are riding the edge of your seat. Even when I watch that film, like, in the background, I still find myself for large sections putting stuff down and watching it. It's just that compelling. And look, I'll admit, as stupid and silly as it is, it's just so much fun. And, you know, all the characters are having a great time.
And it was actually one of the first films where I finally got a lot of respect for Keanu Reeves. Because Keanu Reeves, I was one of those few people who didn't think Point Break was a great film, because I just didn't buy his character. Yeah. I didn't buy him as an FBI agent. To me, he was always going to be Bill and Ted. You know what I mean? And then to see Speed, where he gets to play the cop, but believably, because they actually worked to his strengths, and they actually referred to him as being the dumb one and the muscle and the this, and he played that really well. What I mean? And so he actually played to his strengths, and I think that really worked for him.
Yeah.
So, okay, number one for me is kind of a cheat. Now, and I'm going to explain this. We always choose feature films,
right?
But my number one is actually a made-for-TV movie,
right?
But it was so successful that it was actually shown in cinemas around the world. So it was only on TV in America. Steven Spielberg's Duel.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, as far as I'm concerned, is still to this day an absolute nail-biter.
Yeah.
About man versus machine.
Yeah.
And it really is an amazing film.
Yeah.
And really shot over 11 days on no money. And it's just a man in a car and a truck.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and a few stops along the way. I totally agree with you. Fantastic film. I left that one off my list, and I'm actually kind of...
That was actually my lovely wife, Katie, who reminded me. I wasn't even thinking in that direction. Yeah. She goes, what about Duel? And I went, oh, God. Yeah. You know, that's of course.
My number one was replaced immediately, not one that was going to go on the bottom of my list, which was Air Force One, which I think is a really dumb film, but it is a lot of fun.
It's fun, yeah.
Immediately was trumped by another Airplane film that I just went, oh my god, best film ever. mainly because Steven Seagal dies in the first 10 minutes.
I know the film!
Executive Decision is my number one. The film is just so good. It's just good in every way. It has terrorists, it has planes, it has Steven Seagal dying, which I'm always a fan of. And right at the height of his career, too.
And so Kurt Russell
fly in the plane. And Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt.
In probably his best role ever.
Mm.
And I just freaking love that film. I can watch that film over and over again.
And I really enjoyed Executive Decision. It was dumb as.
It's so silly.
It's once again, it's one of those 90s films that we're saying it's unstoppable. Like,
it's really good. And just like, just back when the word terrorist was just so much not a questioned word, it was just okay. They were just terrorists, so we can kill them.
Absolutely.
We didn't need a reason. Now and you're like, this is so politically incorrect.
We didn't think about politically incorrect in those days. And Delta Knight in our chat room, yes, the film that I mentioned was Duel.
Yeah.
He missed the title. Five good lists. I would actually say all nine, because we repeated one film. Yep. All nine of these films are films that are good fun.
Absolutely.
If you want to see films set on moving vehicles, they're the ones to go see. There are others you could choose. Of course, my wife actually said Titanic, and I went...
I thought of that one, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm never giving that film.
I actually had Titanic as my number five, actually, at one point, and then Hunt for Red October took it over. But to be fair, it's a moving vehicle. Although, as she said, it's stationary through most of the film. you could look at it and say it is moving, but it's moving vertically. So anyway, so that was another one. And then my my lovely wife also wanted to point out that you could choose any of the Star Trek films because they are technically all on a starship, which is a moving vehicle. I said, let's keep this in the real world.
Yeah, we can go all sorts of places with it. We didn't. Let's just put it that way. But yes, good choice from Katie on number one, and I will be giving her my enthusiastic support for that choice.
Absolutely. Now, just to lead us off for today, we're almost wrapped up here, but I just had to, as our final thought of the day, I saved this to the end because this one I looked at and I just went, huh?
Yeah.
This was on Slash Film. Apparently, which you can find this article at slashfilm.com, and of course all our show notes have all the links that we've talked about, geekactually.com. Yeah. Pac-Man, the reality TV show, is coming soon to your television sets. This will require people to run up and down hallways eating things. Yes, I'll let you ponder that for a minute.
Don't worry, I'll wait.
And that's all. I was just going to share that with you, that this is the state. If James Cameron has a problem with the film business at the moment,
there's the state of TV. For a long time.
Yeah, there's the state of TV for you.
Wow.
Pac-Man, the reality TV show.
Wow. Do they all make the noises? Do they all go,
I'm hoping they'll add at least, what's it say here? There's a description that says, a big, crazy, wipe-out type event with a lot of energy. Oh, dear God. All right,
it's going to be something, all right.
I will have to tune in.
I will watch
to at least one, because I think it'll have to be seen to be believed.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow, and with that.
Agree or disagree with anything we have to say on this show, you can send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167, or if you don't want to pay any money, our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. Get our merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Tumblr, and I've just noticed that Josh has been setting up his own Tumblr account
here. I just figure if we're going to go tit for tat with this movie thing, my list won't be as big as yours, but I need a way to track it, and doing it in notes is not necessarily the best way.
Well, that's how I've been doing it in notes.
And I was also thinking it would be a great idea to allow people that know me and people that watch the show to also track the things we do, like going to film events or things like game events and stuff like that. I can put up all these sort
absolutely
of things. So, yeah.
So yeah, follow our Tumblr links will be on the main page once they're finished being set up. So I'm hoping to have mine up and running by the end of this weekend. It's there now. You can go to it, but the proper links will be to it a little bit later on. If you like general geekery and you like a little bit of tech news and so forth, make sure you do check out our other show, which is, of course, Geek Actually, which goes out on iTunes, or you can find the episodes on geekactually.com. And as always, if you want to join our chat room it's always nice to have you guys in the chat room because we can kind of bounce ideas off of you.
Even though Delta Knight is angry at me for my unstoppable thing, I still love you, dude. I really do. And also,
Delta Knight has said about our list, he says, Star Trek is real!
And also says that Inception is a choice because if you think about it, they spend a lot of time in a vehicle, which is true.
They spend the majority of the film actually in a car. That's true. It's a very good point. All right. You can check us out live and you can join in on all these chat room discussions. Go to geekactually.com/live. The Film Act show follows the Geek show, so we start generally around 1:30, 2 o'clock on the film show. But you go to that address. UTC plus 11 is our time zone. And you should also check out some other podcasts around with our friends, which of course are the Movie Fan Cast, which you can find at moviefanhouse.com or soon to be reboundradio.com. And we also want to pick quick shout out because we haven't heard anything, so we need to know what's going on, but our best wishes go out to Brad.
Yeah,
who has been having some health issues. And he's from the Movie Fan Cast. WeekendRonan.com is where you find out everything about The Real Junkies, which you can also find on iTunes, R-E-E-L, Real Junkies, which is another movie podcast like us, but they drink a lot of tequila and have a lot of fun, and we are trying to organize some crossovers.
Damn right.
So if you guys are listening to this now, Fox, Greg, Bernie, fire up your Skypes. We're going to start getting you in here, all right? So we're going to start getting crossovers between these shows. Josh, I believe there's another show you want to talk about.
RodeoSC.com, it's a gaming website. Go over there, check it out. We also go out live at Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Check it out. And apart from that, also, don't forget we have a magazine here at the Geek Actually site, which is Arbiter. Check it out and get on the subscription list now, because in 2 issues' time, we are going to stop giving them out on the website. We will actually be just putting them up on the subscription list. So please check it out. It's well worth it, and we have something special hopefully coming this month for our magazine.
Fantastic. Now, I just wanted to also have a quick shout out to two people. First one is Rachel over at Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM. You guys are doing a great job over there at the Funky Film Show. Keep up the good work. And the other shout out goes out to Holly McKay at FoxNews.com, who basically quoted me this week in an article she was doing.
Thank you, Holly.
Which is fantastic. And the link for that is at our site. You can actually go to geekactually.com, find the link to the original article where she quoted me. And that has actually given us an incredible boost to our numbers this week. It's unbelievable. So big shout out to Holly over at Fox News in America, and Josh Spencer, who does our cartoon work for the cover arts and stuff, who's a really, really talented man, attackninja.blogspot.com. That's it. We're done, I think, except for the fact that we are trying to raise money still for David Storms America. Go to the website. You'll find out more about it. Or there's a link directly in these show notes that will actually take you to find out more about that. I won't explain it all now. We're running out of time. I think that's it.
Yep,
we're done?
I'm done too.
So I'm going to say at this point, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye, Josh.
Bye, man.